many, many ways. It's been a joy to have the earth refreshed by the rains that came. But in addition, I've been spiritually refreshed by the presence of many of the audiences that we have addressed in the day and by the good wishes of so many people who are in this audience, even phone calls that have made my day better. I thank you for all you've done to make this day a blessed day for me, and I trust that we've done something to bless your day. I'm sure whether I have or not, that your presence and encouragement of one another by such a service as this will be a blessing. We have planned tonight to speak on the subject of profanity. In the book of Jeremiah, it is said that profaneness has gone out into all the land. And I believe that if it was true in the day of Jeremiah, it is certainly true in our own time as well. But I think that before we discuss this, we're going to need to get some words clear in our minds. I think when we think of profanity, many of us think of using God's name in vain. And that most certainly is profanity. But there is a deeper reason for calling that profanity, which is broad enough to involve a great many other things beyond what we normally think of. Profanity is actually a word that means outside the temple. When a thing is sanctified, and that's an important word to understand, it is something that God has set apart in a very special way to pertain to Him. A thing that is sanctified is spoken of as holy. In fact, these words are from the very same root. And I might say that a person who is sanctified is spoken of in the Scriptures as a saint. Now, as we mentioned a few moments ago, what is not holy is common. Here is a distinction that to be made between things that are just common and things that are holy because God has set them apart. The word profane originally meant, and the root of it suggests, the idea of being outside the temple. Things that God has sanctified, things that are holy, belong in the temple. On the other hand, things that have not been sanctified should not be in the temple. They are to remain outside the temple. The word profane, as an adjective, is not necessarily something that's bad. You may speak of sacred history and profane history, or sacred literature, which is the Bible, or profane literature, literature by individuals who are not inspired of God, literature that is not directly connected with God. The point that must be made is that these two things are not to be mixed. There's to be no mixing of what is holy and what is common. No mixing of what is sanctified and what is profane. No mixing of what belongs inside the temple with what belongs outside the temple. In the 10th chapter of the book of Leviticus, we have a very inspiring and helpful story, I think, to encourage us to understand what is involved in these two things. Beginning with verse 1 of the 10th chapter of the book of Leviticus, we read about two men, Nadab and Abihu, who were priests of God. They had been recently appointed, the tabernacle had been recently established, and the worship had been recently begun. But Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, each took his censer and put fire in it, and put incense on it, and offered profane fire, this translation says, before the Lord, which He had not commanded them. God had not sanctified the fire that they used. It was common fire. It was profane fire. It had not been commanded. Now, outside of the worship of God, there was nothing wrong with it. But when it was brought into the worship of God, then there was a mixing of what was common with what was holy. And this was displeasing to God. We're told in the next verse that fire went out from the Lord and devoured them. They died before the Lord. Then Moses said to Aaron, "This is what the Lord spoke, saying, by those who come near me, I must be regarded as holy. And before all the people, I must be glorified. God is particular about how we approach Him. He is holy. He is great. He is our Creator. He is our Maker. He is not just some ordinary person. And when we approach Him, we must approach Him as He desires to be approached, with the respect and honor that is due to Him. So Aaron held his peace. And Moses called Mishael and Elzaphan, the sons of Uziel, the uncle of Aaron, and said to them, "Come near, carry your brethren from before the sanctuary out of the camp. So they went near and carried them by their tunics out of the camp, as Moses had said. And Moses said to Aaron and to Eleazar and Ithamar, his sons, "Do not uncover your heads, nor tear your clothes, lest you die. Wrath come upon all the people. But let your brethren, the whole house of Israel, bewail the burning which the Lord has kindled. You shall not go out from the door of the tabernacle of meeting, lest you die. For the anointing oil of the Lord is upon you." They did according to the word of Moses. Then the Lord spoke to Aaron, saying, "Do not drink wine or intoxicating drink, you nor your sons with you, when you go into the tabernacle of meeting, lest you die. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations." And then I want you to notice this, "that you may distinguish between the holy and the unholy, and between the unclean and the clean." They offered fire which God had not commanded. It was profane fire. That is, fire that had not been authorized by the Lord. And the Lord showed His disapproval when they died. And I want to call attention again to this passage. "It shall be a statute forever through your generations, that you may be distinguished between the holy and the unholy." Or, as the New American Standard Version says, "make a distinction between the holy and the profane." What belongs in the temple and what does not belong in the temple. Well, let's look at the point that let me point out that there are two ways that we may be guilty of this. In the first place, we may treat unholy things as though they were holy. This was obviously the mistake of Nadab and Abihu. On the other hand, we may treat holy things as if they were common. We'll talk a little more along the line of the first tomorrow night. Tonight we want to look particularly at this problem of treating what is holy as if it were common. In the fifth chapter of the book of Daniel, we have this very interesting story that we sometimes speak of as the story of the handwriting on the wall. Now, this was brought about by the fact that Belshazzar, who at that time was in charge of the Babylonian army, was feasting with his captains and his men, even at a time when there was great danger. The armies were outside the city, and they were challenged by them. But instead of being afraid, they had a great feast. And they brought the gold vessels that had been taken out of the temple, the house of God, which was in Jerusalem. Those would be sanctified vessels. And the king and his nobles, his wives and his concubines drank from them. And the writing on the wall was seen at that particular time. The writing told him that his kingdom was found wanting. And he did not, of course, recognize and understand the writing. He could not read the writing. And so they sent for Daniel to come and read the writing. And when Daniel came and read the writing, he did more than read what was there. He gave him a pretty good sermon about the pride of his father and also about the sins of which they had been guilty. In Daniel, the fifth chapter and verse 23, Daniel makes this statement, "You have lifted up yourself against the Lord of heaven. They have brought the vessels of His house before you and your Lord. Your wives and your concubines have drunk wine from them. And you have praised the gods of silver and gold, bronze and iron, wood and stone, which do not see or hear or know. And the God who holds your breath in His hand and owns all your ways, you have not glorified." Notice he says, "You have brought these sacred vessels, these vessels that were set apart for use in the temple of God, and you're treating them as if they were just common, as if they were just ordinary vessels. And you've been drinking wine from them, you and your wives and your concubines. That was profanity. When something was holy, was taken and used in a common way, it was a profanity. Now, let's look at some things tonight that are holy, things that God has sanctified, has set apart for you, for His purpose, and see how they may be profane. And the first thing we want to note, of course, is the name of God. This is the way we use it most often. In Exodus, the 20th chapter, in verse 7, one of the Ten Commandments was, "You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not leave him unpunished who takes his name in vain." Now, the normal way of taking an oath in those days, "God do so to me and more also, if this is not true," whatever it is that was being affirmed. And the individual who took an oath by his God. And this, I believe, was primarily intended to suggest that they should not take false oaths. That may be the primary purpose. In fact, that's suggested in the book of Leviticus, chapter 19 and verse 12, where he says that you shall not swear falsely by the name of the Lord your God. Let's read the verse, verse 12. "You shall not swear by my name falsely, nor shall you profane the name of your God. I am the Lord." This obviously is intended to suggest that whenever God's name was used, it was to be used with great reverence, with great respect, never to be used as though it were a common name. Jesus said, "Make no oath at all. Just let your yes be yes and your no, no." And he said, "Whatever is more than these comes from the evil one." A person's name represents the person. I think we must understand that. A person's name represents the person. Sometimes we speak of a person making a name for himself, which simply means he's made a reputation. He stands for something. And the name of God is not just a group of letters. It stands for God Himself. And the respect we have for the name of God indicates the respect we have for God. On the other hand, if we disrespect the name of God, we are disrespecting God. That, I believe, is what is meant when he says, "You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain." You don't use it lightly. You don't use it as though it were just some kind of a common name. Many people would not even, in fact, all of us who respect our parents would not want somebody saying, "Oh, Gardner, that's my dad's name." And if somebody got angry and said, "Oh, Gardner," I wouldn't like that at all. I'd be upset about it. But nobody seems to be upset in our time when somebody says, "Oh," and uses the name of God. It's become so much more common in recent years. I think all of you will recognize that, especially if you are just a little bit older. There have always been people who use God's name in vain. I can't say there was ever a time when that was not true. But it has become increasingly common, so that you cannot listen to a newscast. You cannot walk through down the street. You cannot engage in any kind of activity without hearing people just constantly using God's name in vain. It may be because they're angry. It may be because they're happy. It may be because they're shocked. But under all circumstances, God's name is being used, and with no real reverence whatsoever, with no real thought of what they're saying, it is a matter of great, great concern to true Christian people. I was talking to a Christian lady one time, and she said concerning something that was unpleasant, something that was dangerous, and something that was negative, she said, "Oh, God." Well, she could see, I'm sure, the look on my face. She was a young Christian. And in a moment, she said, "Did I say something wrong?" I said, "I don't know. I don't know. If you were really distressed and felt the need for God, and out of a real, genuine respect for Him, you said, 'Oh, God,' then I can't say you did wrong. I think brief prayers can be offered that way with reverence and respect for God and with an awareness of the fact that He's the one that can help us." But I said, if you weren't really thinking about God, if you were not offering a real petition to Him in humility and respect and reverence, then you certainly did wrong. And how many Christians, I'm not talking about people in the world now, how many Christians have become so careless that they use God's name just constantly without any thought of God at all, just use it as an expletive of some kind. And I'm going to tell you this, it's, I guess, a kind of confession. When you hear it so much, it's very easy to think it when something goes wrong. In fact, the confession I'm going to make is that the other day something happened and I actually expressed the first letter and then asked God to forgive me. I wasn't thinking of God. It was just something shocking, something surprising, and the first thing I knew, I was about to say the name that is so holy, that is so much above any human name, that it would have truly been sin. We need to be careful about that. And one thing I'm going to say is this. We may not be able to avoid it at school, hearing people using God's name. We may not be able to avoid it in the place where we work. We may not be able to avoid it in a store where we may be shopping. You just hear it. Children, as you know. But I'll tell you now, when we pay money to go to a movie where God's name is used in vain, or when we listen to a television program that we know constantly uses God's name in vain, we are actually subjecting ourselves to temptation that we should not want. When we can control it, we need to control it, because as it fills our mind, it destroys our real respect for God. The more His name is used, the less respect there is, and the less respect there is for Him, the more people use His name in vain. That's what's happened. That's the reason it's become so common. People don't respect God anymore. And consequently, they use His name lightly that way. And if we as Christians fall into it, it just means that we're not respecting God as we should either. Profanity is actually possible in so-called worship, and I have that in quotation marks. I think it's possible for us to sing about God and never think about God, just for the fun of it. I believe that singing ought to be something that's enjoyable. I think all of you know me well enough to know that that's true. But when we sing spiritual songs, when we use the name of God, when we sing truth, it ought to be with reverence for God. And if there's not reverence for God, then I believe what we're doing is being done in vain. We need to be very careful how we use the precious name of God and of Jesus and of all other divine beings. I believe the Lord's Day is holy. Now, it's not like the Sabbath. Exodus, the 20th chapter and verse 11 says, "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy." The Sabbath day was a reminder of the Exodus that the children of Israel had left the land of Egypt. In the 5th chapter of the book of Deuteronomy and verse 15, "Remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and that the Lord God brought you out from there by a mighty hand and by an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day, a day of rest." Now, very strict rules were given concerning the Sabbath. No common work was to be done. And there are some Jews today who are very, very careful about that. We were talking just at the dinner table tonight about the care that some Jewish people give not to perform any kind of labor whatsoever on the Sabbath day. In New York and in New Jersey where I live, we have a great many Jewish people. And there are reminders all around of the fact that there are those who will not work. Some of the major businesses are closed on Saturday in our little community. I saw an elevator in New York that was programmed to stop at every floor on the Sabbath day so the Jewish person who entered would not have to punch the button to indicate the particular floor he wanted to get off on. We rather smile at that, but they were very particular to try to avoid any kind of work on the Sabbath day. Well, the Lord's Day is not to remember the Exodus from Egypt. It is a reminder of our forgiveness through the death, the burial, and the resurrection of Jesus, and the hope that we have on the basis of what he has done. And it's important that no rules are stated. We are not told what we can do and what we cannot do on the Lord's Day. It's left to our discretion. It's left to our own choice of expression, just as is the amount we'll give. The amount to be given was specified in the Old Testament. The tithes were clearly delineated. We are not told how much to give in the New Testament. We're to give as we're prospered. We're give as our love. And we're not given strict rules about the Lord's Day. And yet I believe that the fact that it's the Lord's means that it is a holy day. It's a day that we can do things that we cannot do on other days. We have a great many excuses for not reading the Bible, for not visiting the sick, for not teaching our neighbors, just a lot of things we say we don't have time for. And I'm aware of the fact that a person who is working many hours every week to make a living will not have as much time to do some of these things as a man who may be supported for preaching the gospel. I know that. But when we say we don't have time for various things in serving the Lord, I would just ask, what about the Lord's Day? We have a day when we can do things for the Lord in a special way. But what happens too many times is we take that day for a lot of other things that we want to do. I've been absolutely amazed in the New York area how every Sunday is dedicated to something. One day is bicycle riders, the next Sunday is a festival out on the street, and the next Sunday is some kind of a parade, and the next Sunday, it's just every Sunday that is given over to some kind of secular activity. And those involved, well, I can't come to church because I've got this or I've got that or I've got something else. Have we forgotten that it's the Lord's Day? I think that's for sure what Revelation 1:10 is speaking of when John says, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's Day. And the secular writers of that time, say profane writers if you want to, describe the fact that early Christians came together on the first day of the week and that it was known as the Lord's Day. I remember my father making an illustration that has kind of stuck with me about a little boy that passed an apple tree every day. And there were apples on the tree that he sure did want. And to his credit, he went and asked the owner if he could have some of those apples. And the owner said, well, I think there are 7 left. You can have 6 of them, but leave 1 of them for me. Well, the little boy ate the 6 apples, and there was that other one bobbing up there. He sure did want it. And eventually he took it. Isn't it just about that way with the days of the week? God has said, one day is my day. You may do anything you want to do the other day. One day is my day. We can think of all kinds of ways to use it and many times fail to do what the Lord really would have us to do on that day. But the Lord's Supper, without question, is holy. Jesus sanctified it when he instituted it and said in Luke 22 and verse 19, this do in remembrance of me. That made it useful in the temple, if you please. That made it something that is holy, that is pure, that is good, that is pleasing to God. But there were some who profaned it. We turn to the 1 Corinthians letter, chapter 11, and this, I suppose, is the most familiar passage in the whole New Testament because it's read so often in connection with the communion. But he mentions in the early part of the chapter that some had profaned it by making of it a common meal. I believe that's what was being done. In verses 20 and 21, he says, therefore, when you come together in one place, it is not to eat the Lord's Supper. That's not really what you're thinking about. For in eating, each one takes his own supper ahead of others, and one is hungry and another is drunk. It was just becoming a common meal with them. And this was something that sorely displeased the Lord. And he said, what, don't you have houses to eat and drink in? If you're interested in a common meal, you can do that at home. But when you come together, it's to take the Lord's Supper, which is a memorial of the death, the burial, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. That's what we're to think of as we take the Lord's Supper. And it's not a matter of feeding the body. Now again, if you're hungry, eat at home. It's not something to satisfy the physical desire for food or for drink. It's a spiritual thing. And the bit of bread, and it doesn't need to be a lot of bread, or the little bit of the fruit of the vine, and there's no reason it needs to be a large quantity. These things are designed simply to cause us to think inwardly of the Lord, and of His sacrifice, and of the wonderful blessings that we have in His, but as a result of the sacrifice that He has made. And to deal with the Lord's Supper in any common way is to deal with it in profanely. We can change the elements. If we can change the purpose. And I might even say we can change the time. According to the Christian Chronicle, which reports activities of churches of Christ, as they are known, the largest church of Christ, as they put it, in the world, church in Texas, has recently begun having the Lord's Supper on Saturday night, along with instrumental music. Now, if you don't like that, you can come Sunday morning and have the Lord's Supper with no instrumental music. But if you want the instruments and you want to have the Lord's Supper Saturday night, maybe so you can do whatever you want to do on the Lord's Day, then that's provided for you, for your convenience, so you can do it. But it also is possible for us to do so by eating and drinking unworthily. Whoever therefore eats the bread or drinks the cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner will be guilty of profaning, the English Standard Version says, profaning the body and blood of the Lord. It's using these holy elements without making them holy in our heart, without the respect that's due, without the recognition and understanding that they are precious. They are something the Lord has sanctified. It's not common bread. It's not common fruit of the vine. It's something special. And I've seen people sometimes laugh during the Lord's Supper, talk during the Lord's Supper, read something that's other than the Scriptures during the Lord's Supper, just entertaining themselves in one way or another during the Lord's Supper. And this is profaning the Lord's Supper just as surely as Nadab and Abihu were guilty of profanity when they mixed common fire with the thing that was supposed to be offered to the Lord, or when Belshazzar brought the sanctified vessels and used them in a common, ordinary way. Our bodies are holy. In 1 Corinthians, the 6th chapter, this is brought to our attention. Verses 19 and 20. Do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, and who is in you, whom you have from God, and you are not your own? For you were bought at a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. We said that the word profane means outside the temple, but our bodies are not outside the temple. Our bodies are the temple, and their purpose is to glorify God. Now, God understands that there are certain things necessary for the body other than attending a worship service or even going into your closet and praying. We have to make a living. We have to eat. We need recreation. We need rest. There are a lot of things we need. But the primary purpose of our bodies is to glorify God. And when we use them for something that is displeasing to God, that's just as surely profanity as when we use the name of God in vain. We have been sanctified. We read just last night from the 9th chapter, from the 6th chapter, verses 9 through 11, where it says, you were washed, you were sanctified, you were justified. We belong to God in a special way. And our bodies need to be dedicated to Him so that they are never used for anything that would be displeasing to God. And when we take a holy body and join it to a harlot, is what he says in the earlier part of this chapter, we're misusing the holy body that God's given us. When we take our hands, which are to be lifted up as holy hands, and use them to steal, this is profanity. It's using something that belongs to God to do something that displeases God. When we allow our eyes to look on things that are not wholesome and not pure and not good, then we're misusing our eyes that are holy and belong to God. And it is profanity just as surely as misusing the name of God. We belong to God, and it is urgent that we recognize this. We must live as is proper among saints, that is, those who are holy, not like other people. If there's no difference between our lives and the lives of the people around us who are not Christians, then there's something wrong with the way we're living. There must be a clear distinction between the holy, that is, saints, God's people, and those who are not God's people, those who have not been sanctified. We're going to have to give an account to God for the way we've used His body. I rented a car so I could come here, and when I go back, I'm going to have to give an account for the way I've used Mr. Avis's body, Mr. Avis's automobile. And if I have misused it and abused it, I'm going to have to account for it. And my body has been given to me just as that automobile was turned over to me. God turned this body over to me, and I'm going to have to give an account someday for how I've used this body, just as I must give an account for the way I've used His name and the way I've used His day and the way I've used His Lord's Supper. I'm going to have to give an account. Are we ready? It's serious to defile the temple of God. In 1 Corinthians, chapter 3 and verse 17, if anyone defiles the temple of God, God will destroy him, for the temple of God is holy. The temple of God is holy. Now, let me say that this is not referring to our physical body in this particular place. It's referring to the church. But it's the same. To defile a temple is a serious, serious sin. The church, as is mentioned in the third chapter of 1 Corinthians, is also God's temple. And we need to understand that. The church is holy. In the 1 Corinthians letter, chapter 3, he speaks of it as the temple of God. And it can be defiled by unworthy members. He says we need to be careful how we build into this temple various kinds of materials. He speaks of gold, silver, precious stone, wood, hay, and straw. And he says you need to be careful to build the right kind of material into the temple. You know, you can build a temple very quickly and very cheaply of wood, hay, and straw. But if that were built to the glory of some god, would it be any glory or honor to the god at all? Not at all. If you truly want to glorify God, you build the very finest temple you can build. It may not be as quickly built. It may not be as cheaply built. It may not be as large. But you want it to be made of good material. And in building the church, what he's saying is we need to be careful the kind of people we bring into the church. And we're careful that way and determine what kind we bring in by the kind of incentives that we offer to bring them in. Paul said he preached Christ crucified and refused to preach anything else. And that's the way we must gain members. And when we start trying to bring in members by some other methods, we'll bring in people. We can have large numbers, but they're not going to be people who are truly dedicated to the Lord. They're going to be people who maybe like the recreation we offer. Or maybe they like the entertainment that we offer. Or maybe they like the food that we offer. But the Lord wants those who love Him and are willing to stand for Him. People who are hungry and thirst for righteousness. And so we must be careful to offer only the kind of incentives the Lord would have us to offer. It is defiled by human authority. If you are a part of a Lions Club, or if you form a club of your own of some kind, you can make whatever rules you want to make. You can determine when it's going to meet according to your own. You can determine the dues. You can determine everything by it. But when you are dealing with the temple of God, we don't have the right to do that. It's His. He sanctified it. And He is the authority that we must recognize over it. is defiled by bringing in what is secular. Jesus went into the temple in the time of his life here on earth and cleansed it, apparently twice. And in John, the second chapter, we read of his cleansing the temple and turning over the tables of the money changers. And what he said was, "Do not make my Father's house a house of merchandise." There's a temptation sometimes to make the church into a house of merchandise. I saw a cartoon one time that I really, really appreciated. And it said, it was entitled, "What Would Jesus Do?" And here was the foyer of a church building, and it had all kinds of announcements of picnics and all kinds of recreational activities. There was a place where the basketball trophies were kept, and there was a place where they were selling books, and just all kinds of activities. And the question was, what would Jesus do? And the answer was, he'd probably throw it all out of the temple. Throw it all out. And I believe that's probably true. And we need to understand that the church is holy. It's not our organization. We can't decide anything about it other than how to expedite and how to carry out the instructions and the will of the Lord. Profaneness, Jeremiah said, has gone out into all the land. And I think you will confess that in our own country, this is true. I believe you will recognize that things are not kept holy, not respected as they should be. The name of the Lord is not respected. The church of the Lord is not respected. The day of the Lord is not respected. But we as Christians must not allow such profaneness to be named among us as is fitting for saints. We're different. We belong to the Lord. And if we belong to the Lord, then everything pertaining to the Lord is something that we must respect. It's something that we must hold in a special place, a place that belongs to Him, and not let ourselves treat holy things as though they were common. They're not. And God will not hold us innocent if we mistreat and misuse the things that He has sanctified, made holy, things that pertain especially to Him. If you're here tonight and not a Christian, we want to encourage you in your obedience of the gospel. We've been pleading with you night after night to recognize that you're lost without the Lord, that He died to save you, and that it's only by obedience to His gospel that you can hope to be forgiven. We've stressed as best we could the fact that you cannot possibly save yourself. You are not good enough, and on the other hand, you're not so bad, but that you can be saved through Jesus Christ. That's one of the wonderful things. Nobody's good enough to be saved without Him, but nobody's so bad he can't be saved with Him. And if you're here tonight, not a Christian, we want to urge you to think very seriously and soberly of recognizing Jesus as your Savior and coming in obedience to the simple gospel. You believe in Him and are willing to put your trust and faith in Him. Turn from your sins, be baptized into Christ. We're eager to assist you. Sing this song to encourage you as we stand.